Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're broadcasting live today from the State Capitol building in Pierre as we look at the beginning of a new governor administration and a new legislative session in South Dakota. Another new face in Pierre, but certainly not in South Dakota, is the interim South Dakota Secretary of Education, Dr. Ben Jones. He is the Dean of Dakota State University College of Arts and Sciences. He's been on this program before as an author and as a historian. So welcome back now as Secretary of Education. Hi.
Thank you, Lori. Good morning.
Let's talk a little bit about you and just getting to know you a bit, because folks who listen to this program probably understand a little bit of your military history and your history as a historian and an author. But how do you introduce yourself to some of the teachers across the state, the parents across the state, the administrators across the state? Let's get to know Ben Jones.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Sioux Falls and DeSmet, and joined the Air Force through Air Force ROTC and graduated from SDSU. Got my commission, and I left the state for 23 years. Was all over the world, Guam, Germany, Britain, Afghanistan a couple times, and lived around the Midwest. My job in the Air Force focused on the first half of my career was logistics. So I got to learn how things come together in order to be effective. That was my job, was to pull all the plans together and bring the stuff together and the people together in order to make things work for the commander who had objectives to achieve. So that's kind of taught me how to think about that. And about halfway through my career, I wanted to go get my master's. The Air Force Academy sponsors officers every so often to go to grad school and then go teach. So they paid for my master's. I went to Nebraska and got my master's in history. And I taught for 3 years, and then I went to a staff job and worked as a planner at a headquarters that did transportation globally. So that was kind of the same thing that I had done at a base, but now I was helping others do it abroad for various operations. And then I decided I wanted to get my PhD and go back and teach at the Air Force Academy, and the Air Force Academy was happy to have me come back, and they sent me to University of Kansas, and that's where I got my PhD in modern European history. And then I was supposed to be on a controlled 5-year tour teaching history at the Air Force Academy, but the vagaries of the rules, they found a loophole and sent me to Afghanistan twice.
So they do that sometimes, don't they?
Yeah. Well, the war was gearing up. This was 2009, and then I went back in 2011. So that's when the more troops were being added, and General Petraeus had taken over a few months before I got there the second time. So I, the timing of all that kind of hit, and the stress on the Army in particular was hard. And so the first tour I advised at the Afghan Military Academy, which really taught me how complicated a school is, whereas before in the teaching in the classroom, to me a school had been the teacher, the student, and the book. But then when I was advising with the Afghan officer in their history department, and the foreign language department was kind of in my brief as well, I began to see how the facilities, the background and preparation of the professors, really set the tone for what was the art of the possible. So those folks teaching, you know, they did not have, there was no publishing industry in the language of instruction. So there's no book, right? And at that time, the head of the history department at that Afghan academy was translating himself a world military history book from English into Dari.
Wow.
And he was doing it just kind of sentence by sentence as he could during the day. The conversation about publishing versus printing and the rights of the author and the publisher was very interesting to have with him, because they have no concept of intellectual property. And so I was trying to tell him, you know, we have the United States government bought the rights of this book for you to translate, but you can't take it down to the Xerox machine and then sell copies in the bazaar.
Right.
And he didn't know why he couldn't do that. Well, the author and the publisher have rights to this, and they sold it to the United States government for us to give to you for the purpose of the cadets. So those type of very complicated, in that case legal, discussions was very hard to have. So the legal framework really wasn't in place. The entrance exam was something they were doing. They had their version of the ACT, and I got to watch as the, as I think 3,000 prospective cadets came on to the academy to take that exam and to do their physical fitness test and so forth. Anyway, all of that is just to show that, that I really got a wake-up call in what it takes to put a school together from nothing to this. And the ingredients are sometimes really invisible. You know, everything from the preparation of the teachers, it's more than a sheepskin on the wall. It's, do you have the right degree to teach that class and so forth? So for the, since I started on Monday, I've been asking various people in my new department, you know, tell me how you understand certifications. Tell me how you understand the databases that you manage, that you use to manage the qualifications of the teachers. Tell me how all that works. And I think what I bring to the job is those fresh eyes that maybe somebody who had a long career in K-12 would walk in and know all that. But I'm asking good questions, and they're smiling and they're telling me the answers and so forth. And I said, well, why do we do it that way? And that's when the conversation kind of gets interesting. So,
two of the things that early on we were seeing in the information you were putting out and Governor Elm was putting out was this increasing look at the in the importance of history education and civics education. And the second was an increase in transparency and accountability in the department. And I spoke with Governor Noem yesterday about rebuilding trust in government. Mm-hmm. I spoke with legislative lawmakers about the same thing and what their perception was from the people of South Dakota and what the people of South Dakota wanted to see going forward in that area of transparency and accountability. Huge for the Department of Education.
Right.
Tell me where you begin.
Well, I've asked a lot of questions when I came, before I, once it was announced and before I arrived, about where are we with transparency in general. The previous governor, he did a lot of work in setting up the website and putting up all the contracts, and you can see who works for the government, how much they get paid. You can see the contracts that people have with the state, how much they get paid. All that's searchable on the state webpage. So that there was more there than I realized, and that was good to see. So I'm kind of digging into now the how that's helping us understand our own business practices, and thinking about, again, those qualifications, certifications, and the contracts that we let. I don't know what to think about the amount of money that's in the budget for contracts that's funded by the federal government. The department has an $800 million budget nearly every year, and most of that's federal aid from the Department of Agriculture as well as the Department of Ed for various grants, and not only for teacher and instruction and support and so forth, but school lunches and a lot of different ways that we pass this money on to school districts who qualify for that. So you have to have a staff here in Pierre who understands the qualifications and how the rules work and what the federal laws are, and the different agencies who send the money to the Department of Ed here in Pierre have different requests and requirements and mandates and so forth. And so that's really a challenge on that team to understand the processes of the Department of Ag and what the Department of Ag thinks about proper expenditure and accountability and so forth, what the U.S. Department of Education thinks about that. So that is something that I'm trying to understand, and then I hope to be able to explain it more as I get out there and do more things like this.
Let's talk about civics and history education.
Sure.
Because when Governor Noem in the State of the State address talked about a citizenship test as a requirement for graduation, lawmakers responded very favorably.
Yes, they did.
To that. And yesterday it was just something that was coming up, how and what, and should there be civics class, and what kind of legislation might come forward.
Right. All of that needs a lot of background.
Right.
So, and I know we don't
Please.
Have the history professor 50-minute standard time here, but
you can come back next week.
Okay.
And we'll give you all the time you want, Ben. But yes.
Okay. Just briefly, the test is just kind of the beginning. The if you read part of her speech where she leads up to that exam and the announcement of that exam, she quotes General Beadle and how over time, and this has been I don't know how you want to peg it, 80 years or so and coming, where the focus has been more and more over time on skills instead of knowledge, and on science and math instead of civics or social skills and so forth, or social knowledge, geography, social studies types of courses. So I know, and I have seen in my college classroom at the Air Force Academy and as well at Dakota State, that the knowledge that the typical college student brings to their freshman history class is really pretty poor. And I think it's been because STEM and many of the other requirements that have been included in this and mandated in many cases have crowded out. You know, something's got to give, and so in many cases it's that gives. General Beadle, Joe Foss, who's another part of this equation, and in the up through the 1960s and 70s and so forth, that was, you know, civics was taken very seriously, and the focus on STEM has crowded that out since, I don't know, since the 90s, I suppose, where people who want to see accountability in progress can look at math scores and see very clearly the numbers, or at least they think they can. In knowing your history and showing that, that can be a little harder to gauge, because history, as the slang would go, is a soft skill, and doing history is something that's not commonly understood as how one does that. What is a history skill? I don't know how many times I've been asked as a professional, well, wouldn't you like to go do this, be a history professor, to actually use your degree? And I say all the time, I use my degree every day in how I think about things. History taught me how to ask a good question, how to locate where the sources might be, to review the sources, weigh them comprehensively, and then pull out what it means, and then explain it to a wide audience. Now, that's a valuable skill, whether you're going to be a judge, like the Supreme Court justice you just had on, or a banker, or a journalist in the media. A history degree is widely applicable to a lot of different things, certainly marketing, a lot of different things like that. So as an Air Force officer, I use that skill every day when my boss would come in on the staff and say, tell me why we do it this way. I don't know. Let me figure that out. And so go in and do the research and then come up with an answer and then come dial it down to a one-pager or something, and then that person, that general, can go on. We're doing that for the governor. All very senior leaders who are very busy, CEOs, COOs, CFOs, and so forth. They need to know, what do I need to know? And there's people behind them that get them the answers, and those people often are lawyers sometimes who have degrees in history, or people who have similar degrees who are used to collating a lot of information, sorting out what it means, and providing that to the audience that needs it. And that skill is valuable, certainly in your own civic life, which is really the impetus for what the governor said in the speech. We can see, not only do I have the anecdotal evidence that historic or civic knowledge has declined, but I think in our politics in the last 20 years, we've seen political leaders, the media, try and get away with stuff. And I don't know how many times I've heard newscasters, politicians say, this is the worst time ever in American history, or words to that effect. And if you know a little bit about the Civil War, the civil rights movements in the 1960s, Vietnam, Watergate, it's easy to step back with some perspective and say, no, this isn't worse than the Civil War. The United States has always had its differences. Usually we work through them very peacefully. Once in a while it's violent, and we'd like to know why. Why is today, which is very contentious, and certainly there are differences about things as we have our government shut down and so forth, but let's understand this with some perspective. I think the government's been shut down 15, 16 times since the Reagan administration. You know, that'd probably be kind of nice to know, but people like to push the hype, and if you have some civic knowledge, you could understand with some perspective that we're going to be okay, you know.
As and we're short on time, but I do want to ask you about the funding formula and some of the, you know, sort of early conversations you're having about the needs for rural schools, the needs for urban schools, and how you're approaching some of those conversations before we let you go.
The Blue Ribbon Task Force that happened a couple of years ago certainly has pumped more money into the salaries. The salaries have increased, and that's good to see that there's other I don't know if I call them ancillary, but there are other parts of the funding formula that have also given the Department of Ed and school districts the opportunity to strengthen teaching. There were some grants and so forth, or mentorship program would be one that was started a couple of years ago based on the funding formula. Nobody has, as of this time, I think there's interest in understanding where the revenues are going and so forth. The budget address will happen next week. I'll begin conversations with people who are very interested about the funding formula this afternoon. A couple folks have come to my office to chat about some things, mostly the civics test, I think. But the bottom line is the funding formula is not something that the Secretary of Education determines. So I'm watching that debate such as it happens with interest, just as you are.